of cream, red roses too.
This is Ed Cohen, editor of GlobalBusinessNews.net and your host today on GlobalRadioTalkShow.com, coming to you today from Washington, D.C. and San Diego, California. Our special guest is Hampton Dowling, managing partner of the HCB Group out of Washington. Hampton is a successful P&L and operations executive, global experience, and tons of relationships. Hampton is a leader with personal energy and domain knowledge in international homeland security, mobility and cyber risk, trade and commerce, alternative energy and technology convergence across multiple verticals. Let's welcome Hampton Dowling.
Well, hi, Ed. I appreciate that. It's quite an entry. I'll try and step up and measure to it.
Hampton, you've had a career of significant international exposure in business. From a corporate perspective, what's your outlook for 2016 as you consider the U.S. business opportunities from the domestic market here in the U.S. and looking at various regions of the world?
I think opinions vary depending on the set of lenses that you use. I'm not an economist, but I think the signs continue to point towards an underperforming domestic market across really most of the verticals. And when you compare it with the rest of the world, which is continuing on trajectories that suggest a very robust expansion. I think an easy set of indicators might be found by comparing the regional and national GDP numbers. I mean, after all the corrections that we're going to go through with the U.S. forecast for this year, our GDP is going to be somewhere around less than 2%, maybe around 1.5%. That's really a flatline economy, and that has a direct bearing on all the verticals, large and small businesses, families, the discipline and strategy to managing capital, the day-to-day part of doing business. The end-of-year forecasts include an upper end scale, maybe towards 3%, but it depends on who you're talking to on Wall Street.
What do you think about the rate increase? Do you think that's going to impact emerging economies in a dramatic way? It's just a slight increase, but the impact of that is questionable.
I don't really think that's going to have much of an impact, and it's not going to be felt really outside the U.S. Really much whatever. I think just the fact that it was only 2.25% kind of suggests the Fed was simply taking an action because they felt it was necessary, but they were rather indecisive as to whether to leave the rates or raise rates dramatically. And there really isn't a long-term expression of a policy change whatsoever. In fact, they may be looking at the economy taking a downturn. Just the manufacturing indices for here in the U.S. are all pointing down. They're the lowest since 2008. And those are really the wage-generating indices for any business. So when you look at GDP and you look at manufacturing indices, both that are less than 2%, those are responding to orders across all verticals, whether it's medical, agro, housing, energy, automotive, technology, you name it. And that's really further exacerbated when you have a climate where 75% of our CEOs are struggling to keep up with new technologies and, almost the same amount are trying to figure out whether their own value propositions, products and services are going to be relevant. But statistics are statistics. The contextual feeling is really what's important, and that's how people express themselves in boardrooms and meetings and even employee lunchrooms. And right now, people aren't feeling very good. The malls are empty, online shopping is down. The defense-related industries in the U.S. are probably doing okay, but they're really fulfilling contracts that were to be awarded 2 to 5 years ago. Overall government consumption is still very down. Our unemployment rate is still high, and we have the lowest labor participation rate in 50 years. I'm not suggesting the rest of the world is perfect, but there are some opportunities abroad that are not reflecting the same turbidity and negative downturns that we have here in the U.S. I just came from Ukraine and Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan, and their economies are going in a much different direction. You know, even Ukraine, which has its problems with Putin. You know, again, GDP is a very good indicator that presents a change in leverage to countries abroad. They have a better cash flow. They have an increased demand and demand signals. It presents to U.S. companies an opportunity to for foreign direct investment, a different and emerging labor pool, and just an increasing and different consumer demand. I mean, generally speaking, low return regions are really the U.S., Britain, and the Eurozone, and nearly all other regions in the world, you know, notwithstanding geopolitical challenges, they present opportunities with very compelling profit potentials.
So let's jump aside for a second and look back at some of the items you mentioned. And although you said the U.S. economy from reports looks like 2% the coming year, that's a huge economy, though, and 2% is a pretty big number, isn't it?
Well, you know, 1.5% to 2% for a country that's, you know, got about a $20 trillion cash flow, that's really almost flatline. In fact, this year, we're now going to owe 102% of our GDP in terms of federal debt. So, you know, and I know that's an issue that's discussed in the current election cycle, but we are... When our manufacturing indices are all pointing south, when people aren't spending, when government consumption is down, and so many people are just out of the workforce, for an economy of our size, if you were to have that same, if those same behaviors were characteristics in France or Vietnam, Malaysia, Brazil, those countries would be in an enormous depression. So we do have some resilience in our economy that keeps it going, but we are barely treading water right now in terms of growth. And growth today, you know, people want to compete for contracts. They want to make investments today so that they can realize the benefits for tomorrow. And when you can't do that, you have to think about, well, where can I go? I have to think about my country's company's future. I have to make investments. I have shareholders that expect a return on their investment. So my preference, just looking at the numbers, is to look outside the U.S., generally speaking.
Well, that's very interesting. Okay, so now what about international competitiveness vis-a-vis U.S. and other places? Can the U.S. compete?
You know, absolutely. We're really the preferred vendor, so to speak, but I think we have to, again, you have to put things in context. You know, as you look outside the U.S., you know, business cultures are different. Business practices are different. You know, expectations are different. I mean, even the size of paper that you put in a Xerox machine, the standard size paper, is different. So little things, even the little things are different. And we in the U.S. tend to view business development in a certain way. Even the term business development isn't used outside the United States. Everything's different. You know, intuitively, we kind of sense that there are differences. But you'd be surprised if the companies, you know, say a company in Tampa that's doing business in Houston, many of them feel that that same business approach can be used in Buenos Aires or Manila, and it's just really not the same. You know, companies have a corporate strategy, a business unit strategy and operational strategy, and all those things reflect, you know, the basics, looking at profit over loss and stability of the company, Sarbanes-Oxley and corporate governance and all that. But when you look abroad, you have to consider the business climate, differences in trade and commerce policies, the cost of capital and where that money comes from, and the loan requirements, and the distribution of risk across the different players. And because of shifts in productivity and GDP, much to the advantages of the areas that I mentioned during the last question, U.S. companies now have to compete head-to-head where they didn't have to before in the Eurozone, with countries from the Eurozone, the U.K., Canada, and China in new markets. And before, it was a lot easier for us to do business. But today, there's a lot more competition in the same competitive pool. Now, you asked, is the U.S. competitive? We don't have corruption in the United States. We have Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. We have ethics. And that's admired around the world. We have the best products in the world. We manage products better and services better than anybody in the world. We have transparent business practices. We have global reach. And people like America. They like Americana. I mean, it's, you know, people want the United States. But you have to be there. You know, for U.S. companies to do business, you have to be there. And, you know, there's a cost associated with that. I mean, you know, you can establish a branch office. You have to retain counsel. You may want to look at private-private partnerships. You know, there's a lot of different ways to have presence. But before that, you know, companies have to be informed. They, you know, at least from my perspective, being informed is really the primary business investment. They have to understand the bigger picture, that the larger moving parts that are fundamental, you know, who has the right answers? Who can you ask questions of in order to get the answers that allow you to complete due diligence? And, you know, what do you really have to do? You know, armed with answers to key questions, you know, it becomes, the challenge to doing work becomes a little less ominous. But, you know, one aspect of being there, just to kind of close my response a little bit, is, you know, being there physically is really only 40% of answering it. The other part of it is really looking at your presence on the internet. And if you think about it, we sit at home and we're on our computers, we're on our phones, the television is connected, our tablets, the gaming systems. You know, we have about 310 million people in the United States, and 80% of them are online. But the rest of the world is quickly coming into at the same level. If you look at the markets in Asia and Southeast Asia, to include Japan, there are more people in that one region than all other parts of the world combined. There are more people online in China than double the U.S. population. And I think competitiveness is directly proportional to a company's visibility on the World Wide Web. And I think that's something that needs to be considered.
It sounds daunting.
You think about it. If you're sitting in an airport in Frankfurt, if you're in the airport in Houston, you're on a train going to New York City, you're at a restaurant in Buenos Aires, you're anywhere in the world, it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're a housewife purchasing makeup, or whether you're a C-suite Fortune 50 businessman, you're on your mobile device, you're on your iPad, you're conducting business, you're doing research. And being competitive is having that digital footprint present everywhere. Where you are on search engine results pages, you know, how effective is your brand being expressed in the target markets that you have? So, you know, competitiveness is about applying not only the basics of managing what we do here in the domestic market, but you have to be being prudent about what you do physically overseas in your counsel and understanding legal issues. But you have to have visibility online, and of course structuring your organization and having the right resources to support that is important. Being successful overseas is all about how effective you are in your level of competitiveness.
So how do Americans prepare for becoming more effective?
Well, you know, I think what I would tell CEOs is that they simply need to they need to do their homework. They need to get better informed. You know, they have to really ask key questions. You know, what's happening in the world or a specific region? You know, understanding what are the fundamental activities? Who's doing what to whom? Why does it matter? Does it impact the U.S.? Does it impact trade? What does it mean for a company's clients? And more importantly, for the company's competition? You know, what is it? You know, what would have to happen now for results to align with a company's goals and objectives? And, you know, what does a company have to do to have an impactful role? What do you do right now? Companies, specifically the leadership, to be successful, you have to distill the bigger picture so that solutions are understood and with an appropriate regional context. Because after all, you know, it's board members that make decisions. It's shareholders that are expecting a return on investment. And unless you're prepared to answer those questions, you're not going to be successful. You have to do your homework. You have to pay attention to the news. You have to go to association meetings. You have to kind of get out of your comfort zone, look beyond just your market vertical, and realize from an international perspective what has bearing on business. So when you look at the evening news, you pay attention to, you know, when you're in the airport and you're looking at the TV about what, you know, the news in the waiting room, pay attention to what's going on and ask the question, does it affect my business? How does it affect my business? How do I have to change the resources that I have? And what specific changes or advantages are presented to my value proposition? That's to do. You have to do that on a constant basis in order to be competitive, because the rewards for doing business overseas are significantly greater, at least today and for the foreseeable future, than what we see here in the domestic market.
Part of what you're saying is to meet people who could introduce you to other people.
Well, I mean, networking is always part of it, and it becomes very important in terms of international business. You know, outside the United States, there is a greater affinity to culture. People are very interested in what happens, you know, online. More people are online outside per household and growing than there really is in the United States. But there's a sense of wanting to shake your hand, wanting to know what you know. For U.S. companies and leadership to be knowledgeable about their history, their culture, their challenges, their expectations, and you have to spend time meeting people. So, you know, today we always say, well, we can do a lot online. You know, it's go-to meetings, and those are very effective. But if you want to introduce your value proposition, if you want to make sure that it's successful, if you want to make sure your reputation is expressed in the right context, you really have to be there physically and online, and it has to be managed carefully. So I think today it is of exponentially greater importance for business to understand more about themselves and what it takes to be competitive outside the U.S.
Well, talking with Hampton Dolly, managing partner of the HCB Group in Washington, what is your website, Hampton?
I personally don't have a website, Ed. It's myself. It's a few of my partners. We do a lot of things based upon our reputation. Everything is outside the U.S. It's all within the network. People knock on our doors. They ask for advice, sometimes to be retained, sometimes to develop a strategic partnership or a regular public, be participating in a public-private partnership. I just haven't had a need to have a website, Ed, but if I do need one, I know where to get it, and because I understand the value of reputation management and having visibility. I'm a small business. It's between 1 and 5 people, and your value proposition has a certain upper end as to how much you can manage and tackle. What are you comfortable with? In other words, you always understand what your value proposition, what are your goals, what do you hope to achieve, and where do you perform, where do you act, what are your relationships? Having a website, at least for me right now, isn't necessarily that important. Although I am on the web in a number of featured articles, public statements, I speak at probably 60 conferences and forums a year. I'm the editorial director for the largest logistics magazine in Latin America. I do have visibility, but digital marketing for companies, you know, really is fundamental to competitors. I mean, we used to use the word worldwide. Well, now it's really web-wide. When you talk about being around the world, it's really around the web. So when I give advice to companies, when I'm providing services to companies, when I'm contracted to have a C-suite principal role in a company, I absolutely make sure that they have online visibility and presence. And, that's where I focus my attention.
Well, thanks very much for this. If we could just circle back, we have about 2 minutes remaining here available.
Sure.
Back to global experience and relationships in places like you mentioned Ukraine. So about Ukraine, it just seems like it's really a daunting place to be right now. But is it actually normal in Kiev? Tell us a little bit about it quickly.
Well, you know, Ukraine is a very large country. It's one of the largest in Europe. It's had just about every empire roll through it because of its strategic location. It's commonly known as the agricultural bed of Europe. It's has a coastline and significant ports in the Black Sea that take it into the Mediterranean. And you know, Hitler was very active and absorbed Ukraine. So did Joseph Stalin. So did the Soviet Union. And now Putin has taken over the Crimea and is very active on the eastern border of Ukraine. So it is a very volatile region, but you know, it has leverage. A lot of natural gas flows out of Ukraine. Agriculture is playing a big role. Putin is very active in other parts of the world. So Ukraine is still trying to recover from breaking away from the Soviet Union. There's a lot of foreign direct investment going in Ukraine, agriculture, urban development, roads, bridges, telecommunication, hospitality, hospitals. Those are very robust market verticals in Ukraine. But it does have a security problem as you proceed towards the borders. In the large cities from Odessa to Kyiv, looks like any other metropolitan area. In fact, don't even let military vehicles and uniforms in the city. So, but like a lot of countries, it has limitations with bureaucracy. Its institutions are not quite as robust and modeled after Western institutions. And that's where things start to slow down. It's very centralized. Personally, I have to speak to ministers, to the president, in order to get things done. That will change over time, but like a lot of governments around the world, you have to recognize what is their political structure. And the more centralized it is, the more important relationships become, your reputation becomes paramount, and you have to have the right partnerships in order to have those correct meetings that allow your business to thrive. Doesn't mean you're unethical, doesn't mean you're skirting the system. It's just they do business differently than we do here in the United States. And you have to recognize it. You have to be patient. You have to have the right presence. And you just have to have the fortitude to continue going forward. In Ukraine, like many places, robust. It's a great place to invest your money. The rates of return will be high. You just simply have to have the stick-to-itiveness, to put it probably in a more generalized way.
Hampton, what's your email for people to reach out to you?
Oh, my email is Hampton, H-A-M-P-T-O-N, at the HCB Group, T-H-E, and then HCB Group, G-R-O-U-P, com.
I thank you very much for being our guest again.
Thanks,
Mr. Hampton Dowling, managing partner of the HCB Group, LLC, out of Washington, D.C., signing off now from Washington and San Diego Global Radio Talk Show.com.
I think to myself, what a wonderful